Hey Alexa, play the next episode of the Find Your Hustle podcast.
Here's Find Your Hustle from Amazon Music. Here's episode 36. I'll say it again, do an apprenticeship.
Yo, 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 show. You're tuned in to the Find Your Hustle podcast where other top hustlers teach you how they hustle their way to the top through free game. Taking these legal chances so we could do these side of baby money dances, show.
Mark, welcome back to the Find Your Hustle podcast. How you doing, man?
Ah, brother, I am good, man. Leveling up in life, leveling up in business, leveling up in my career, man. What are you telling me?
I'm all right, brother. It's been a minute.
It's been far too long.
People are saying 2022, what happened to Find Your Hustle?
Is Mark really a scammer?
The last time we recorded, we had a different government and a different queen, a different royal family on the chair. That's crazy.
Oh, wow. Way to put things into perspective, man. Mm.
Well, we're back today. And you know we wouldn't come back without a feature episode.
An offering to the people.
Accept our forgiveness. We welcome Harry Turner to the podcast today. How are you doing, Harry?
I'm very well, thank you, Sim. Very well, and thank you very much for inviting me to be on the podcast. I'm looking forward to having a chat with you guys, you know, about careers and that sort of thing.
Of course, of course. Thank you very much for coming on. So Harry is a product manager. And the more I spoke to Harry about what he does, the more intrigued I got, because every time I'm speaking to Harry, he's in Ireland or he's in this country, he's on a plane, he's getting first class flight tickets. I don't know what's going on. He's getting all his food paid for, and he seems to really enjoy what he does, or what he did, apparently. We'll go into that a little bit more. But Harry, for the people who don't know, what is it exactly that you do?
Yeah.
So I am a product manager for analytical products. So that involves predominantly gas analysis, which may sound quite boring to some people, but actually I kind of enjoy it. It's got a lot of real world applications that you don't necessarily realize. So I technically and commercially support the product range for Siemens, the company that I work for.
So I think a lot of times when you've told me a little bit about what you do, particularly with what is it that you actually, the products that you're actually working on, I think it gets lost on me with your technical jargon. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
When you're talking about these gases, I don't think I know what you mean. I definitely don't know what you mean. I don't think Mark knows what you mean. So can you tell us a little bit more about the product?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No worries. So I think one of the applications that most people will be able to sort of resonate with is emissions monitoring. So when you're driving around on the motorways, or, you know, in London, whatever, where there's some sort of industrial areas, you see loads of industrial plants, refineries, chemical plants, or power stations and that sort of thing. They've got stacks that protrude into the air and they're chucking out plumes of smoke. So you've heard about the net zero campaign, which Boris Johnson decided to put into law to say the UK will be net zero by 2050. So a lot of our analyzers are going to help with that, because we're analyzing what those plants and sites are putting into the atmosphere. So there's certain emissions of different components that are obviously harmful to the atmosphere. And our products, you know, analyze those and make sure they're within the limits that are set by the Environment Agency and the government. So that's probably one of the applications that, you know, will be easiest to understand, shall we say. And, you know, there's loads of others as well on oil and gas refineries and that sort of thing, where we're doing much more technical analysis of customers' product quality, efficiency, and that sort of thing, when, you know, obviously ultimately customers want to produce something and have something to sell. So we can analyze their processes to make sure that they're working properly, you know, as efficiently as possible, they're getting the most out of what they're putting in and that sort of thing. So our products are based around doing that, really. And you'd be surprised how much, you know, how many gases are used in production and processing in those industries. Right, I don't know if that makes any sense to you guys.
I'm taking it in. Right. So when you say product as well, you're talking about, well, actually like a digital product, like a monitoring instrument for these organizations that are doing the production.
Correct. That's our side of it. Yeah.
Okay, so it's B2B then. Okay, so you're pitching the product. So what's your role entail then?
My role, I am technically and commercially supporting the product. So a lot of them are quite technically involved. A lot of them are bespoke to a customer's process. So I'm there helping specify what's required, and on the more, you know, the more difficult applications and difficult products, liaising with our headquarters in Germany to make sure that what we're offering meets the customer's needs. And then, you know, obviously on the commercial side of it, doing some quotations and then following them up and, you know, discussing with the customers, making sure, you know, essentially aiming to win the order, because obviously, regardless of the situation, it's going to be 9 times out of 10 a competitive situation against other competitors.
I see. So there's other companies that are producing similar products that you're trying to get, you're trying to push your product over.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not like a Siemens specific software.
I mean, it's a Siemens specific product, but there are others that do similar products that do the same thing.
I see.
So, yeah.
And do you keep sort of a long standing relationship with, you know, the clients that you sell to, sort of thing?
Yes. Yes. Okay. My focus is predominantly on existing business. So we have a number, you know, wide range of existing customers throughout the UK and Ireland. So I focus mainly on existing business, although I do support our new business as well. But we have another colleague of mine that focuses on new business predominantly. So a lot of the customers that I'm talking to, we've been talking to for years. And I mean years.
So is it sort of ongoing, well, I guess, product management that you're actually doing with the existing clients?
Yeah, so making sure that what they've got is still working properly. Mm-hmm. And providing support where needed if they're having problems, because ultimately nothing lasts forever. So, you know, there is a life to these products as well. So I guess you could look at it as a bit of product management, but also, you know, some sales as well and that sort of thing. It's kind of a hybrid role of both, I would say.
Yeah.
Sales and tech support sort of thing.
It sounds like this is a step in between sales and tech support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I can give you a bit of background on how I came upon the role, if you like.
Oh yeah.
So I started out as an apprentice at a different company.
Can I get a shout out for apprenticeships, please? Because that's
absolutely. I swear by apprenticeships. I love them. It was great for me. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to be going to uni, and then I think in the May of the year I was supposed to go to uni. I decided really last minute, actually, I don't want to go to uni yet. It's not for me. For whatever reason it might be. So I started looking at other things and I came across an apprenticeship. And that's where it's got me to where I am now, which for someone aged 29, I think I'm in a pretty good position. So I started as an apprentice, you know, on the tools, doing a technical role, progressed through doing a HNC. Then I did a degree in engineering at my previous company. Mm-hmm. I then moved into internal sales. So I was supporting the external sales team by putting together quotes and that sort of thing and getting in touch with some customers for some technical information. I then always wanted to take a step into external sales, mm-hmm. you know, so that is out on the road visiting customers, selling the product that obviously I've spent a while learning and understanding. Mm-hmm. And I got put in touch with Siemens. And Siemens offered me this role as a product manager, which was sort of pitched to me as sales, but also, you know, more on the technical side because it's a technically involved product. Mm-hmm. And I guess the difference was that I wasn't given a specific target on my head to meet. It was a group target. So predominantly, if you're going for a fully external sales role, you will be given a target to hit. So yeah. That was quite nice for me to learn in this role that I'm in at the moment. About sales and understanding, but not have the pressure of you have to hit your target every year, that sort of thing. So that's where the role sort of came about for me. And, you know, I've been doing it for, it's literally 4 years on Sunday, no, Monday, 4 years on Monday. Nice. So, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it. All of the guys that I work with are great as well. And I've managed to get out on the road and visit a load of customers. As Sim said, I do a bit of travel. I've been to Germany a fair few times. Been to Ireland quite a few times as well. So
you're in Dublin every other week, man.
Not quite like that. I think I've been 3 times this year. So for work, and it will be 2 times for pleasure.
as of this weekend. That one in there.
Yeah. I went with the other half, my girlfriend, a couple of weeks ago, and then I'm going back for a mate's 30th birthday next weekend. So that'll be good fun.
Nice.
Safe to say, I know the city by now.
Yeah, that's good, man. There's some bits that I want to unpick, especially, you know, starting from your apprenticeship journey. So what level was your apprenticeship and how did you find it? Well, you said you looked for it yourself. So what level was your apprenticeship?
So it was a level three, NVQ level three to start
NVQ
with.
NVQ level three. And then you touched on something real important. You said you'd done a HNC. Now that's a higher national certificate. And then
correct.
Did that allow you to skip any years in uni or did you have
yes.
to? Yeah.
It did actually. Yeah. Yeah. So
tell us.
I started out getting my apprenticeship. So I live in the southwest, sort of between Bristol and Gloucester.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a company in Gloucester called Gloucester Engineering Training. Shout out to them. A great company. But what you can do as an apprentice, if you're looking for a technical apprentice in, say, a manufacturing or electrical role, you can go and speak to them and apply to them. And they'll put you through all of the aptitude tests, the maths and English, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a number of companies on their books or that they have relationships with that they'll send that are looking for apprentices, and they'll send your results out to all of them. And then those companies will get in contact with you directly. So it kind of saves you going out and applying for each individual apprenticeship. You know, they've probably got a base of, I don't know, 20 companies. I don't know the exact number that they already have relationships with. So you apply to this one company and then you can get multiple offers. And I happened to get, you know, I got offered one and I got the first one. But I think that's just because my interview skills, you know, but we'll see. So that was 4 years. So the first year was at college, you know, learning with instructors and that sort of thing, working through the MVQ, doing some classroom stuff on the side as well. You had to do some like maths and engineering maths and IT skills and that sort of thing, working with CAD, you know, so AutoCAD, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Then I went into the business. The second year I was on a day release. So 1 day a week, I'd go to college, 4 days a week in the business. And I'd be rotating around, you know, learning different areas and aspects of the business and in the technical side of it. So a lot of assembly work and understanding the products and that sort of thing.
And then, can I ask just quickly, was your apprenticeship was it a standard? Were you on the new standard or the old standard?
That is a good question. When did the new standard come into place? Because this was 11 years ago.
11? Okay. No, probably on the old
one. So I expect the old one, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Expect the old one.
Okay.
And then after that, so that was 4 years. I then did a HNC in electrical and electronic engineering as well. So I went to college 1 day a week in Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
And then I smashed that. You know, put the work in, smash that, and then moved on to a degree. So because I'd done that HNC, I've managed to find an engineering degree. So it's called integrated engineering. So it covers quite a wide range of engineering aspects. But I was able to progress into just the final year. So I skipped the first 2 years.
But I
did it over 2 years because it was day release again. So it was the final year of a degree, but split over 2 years because it was part-time.
Mm-hmm. And that still enabled you to work, yeah?
Yeah. So that was through the company that I was at, that I did my apprenticeship with. You know, they sponsored me through that. So they gave me permission to go once a week.
It's essentially sort of 1 year of uni then?
It's 1 year of uni, but split over 2 years because it's part-time.
So
it's the final year, yeah.
Mark, you done a similar thing, didn't you?
I did a similar thing, man. This is as soon as I heard apprenticeship, I thought maybe Harry is another case study of why it needs to be a more popularized route, man.
I completely agree. It's the way to go, in my opinion, at the moment. Obviously, if you've got a desire to go to uni and learn that way, then by all means, I completely support that as well. But for me, learning on the job provided me with a great sort of grounding and understanding and basis to, the you know, move my career forward.
Yeah, and you kind of start making money early, which is great. We have a lot less debt as well, Harry, you know?
Yeah. Just a mortgage for me, eh?
That's it. You know, what's your uni debt looking like, Sim?
My uni, listen, don't even get me started on my uni debt. I have 3 years of uni debt. Then I have a post-grad master's uni debt too. Oh, honestly. My uni debt goes hard. I think I have something in the region of 60K uni debt.
Whoa. Yeah. That's a big old debt that is.
Is that not scary?
You know what the thing is, yeah? Like, what do I pay? Like, maybe £150 a month of it. And literally, there's no way it'll get paid off. The interest on there, I saw the statement the other day. The interest they charge on those uni fees are ridiculous.
Yeah.
See, so, I didn't even know there was interest.
It's bad, yeah. They say there's no interest for the first, like, so 5 years whilst you're at uni, and then, bam, you get hit with it.
Well, to be fair, technically, I guess that's true because I started uni when I was 18 and 25 now. But, like, it's ridiculous. It's essentially you're waiting until you're 60 and then it'll go away.
Don't they write it off after a certain period of time?
Yeah. It's like 30 or 40 years.
Well, I don't want to go down the whole student holes, this, you know, the student loans rabbit hole, but like, I feel like they don't actually get their money back, you know.
No, of course they do. They charge so much interest that it's essentially just you'll pay back probably what is your uni fees over the period of time that you're paying it, but because of the interest, you won't pay back the full amount.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Like, okay.
You know what? I wish I could pull up my student statement and tell
your
you.
Your SLC.
does having that debt go against you when you're trying to get a mortgage and that sort of thing? No.
So student finance isn't counted towards your credit score.
Oh, that's all right then. Yeah. I was going to say, otherwise that is instantly putting you in a bad position.
Imagine.
Yeah. Well, that shows how much I know about it. Not that much.
The thing is,
because we don't have any, Harry. That's
no, so I'm extremely pro don't go to uni unless it's absolutely necessary. And like, for the route that I was going down to, I know Mark always says I could have gone down an apprenticeship route as well, but like, I don't think I could have. It was necessary. Like, I'm a lawyer now, and the only way to do law is to do your LLB or to do another degree, then do a 1 year GDL, which is just another year of uni, which is more money, and then to do your LPC, which is a master's course. So like, you have to do it. You just, there's no way around that. But if you're going into anything that allows for a number one easier route or a non-necessary degree, for example, if you're doing it because you're not sure what to do exactly, I'm 100% for don't do it if you don't need to.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the fence, I guess.
Yeah,
because I understand, you know, unis obviously have their place. You can't do every role through it on the job training, like an apprenticeship and that sort of thing. So, if you're going to be a doctor or something like that, then, you know, the guy that's going to be looking after me at my local surgery, I want him to be suitably qualified.
Yeah.
Listen, reforms are coming. Reforms are coming. Maybe in your case, Sim, law wasn't a, say, standardized apprenticeship yet, right? Mm-hmm. But they are trying to turn all of the subjects into roles. And then from there, they can all be apprenticeship standards. And there's like even a new BTEC coming out. Obviously, you got to go through that thing of, you know, being a subject and not getting respect for, you know, 5 or 10 years, and then becoming like the traditional route to do something. But reforms are coming. They're floating around a medicine apprenticeship. I can tell you that.
I did not know that. That'd be impressive. You know, if that comes about, that would be great, I think. And, you know, the way that the UK is at the moment with the economy and all that sort of thing, and we do have an aging workforce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at what I do in gas analytics. It's quite a niche area. And I don't really know anyone that's younger than me coming through, really. Well, maybe a couple of people that I know of, but it's, you know, so who's going to fill that gap? Who's going to fill the age gap that is... It's only been created by ourselves and you know, the government, I guess. But
I guess
my apprentices are that way for me. Sorry, Sim, go on.
That's all right. I guess my question then sort of falls into, you did an apprenticeship in engineering and then you did your degree in engineering. So how did you end up going into the work that you do now? Because presumably you were planning on becoming an engineer or something like that.
I don't really know what I was planning on becoming at the time. I don't really know, but for me, I've always been fairly hands-on. Mm-hmm. I've had quite a technical brain and that sort of thing. So I did my apprenticeship thinking, I'm still learning, I'm getting paid to learn, I'm gaining qualifications. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to have to stick in doing this forever, but I am still developing myself. And, you know, I have this thing at the company I'm at the moment, we call it a growth mindset, which really, you know, is all about personal development. And I've had that really throughout my whole career. So I joined my apprenticeship thinking, do you know what, this is a good idea, a good way forward. Let's learn and do this. I almost quit in my first year because I was like, do you know what, is this actually for me? And then that's when I sort of took a step back and looked at it like, actually, you know, I don't know what else I want to do at the moment. And I'm learning, I'm still getting qualifications and I'm pretty good at it still. So let's carry it on, see where it goes. And then, yeah, so for me, I ended up, my final placement on my apprenticeship was within the gas analytics team at the company I used to work for. They were short of a person there. So they said, you know, we've got an apprentice who needs a final placement. Let's put him in with you guys. He can learn doing all the proposals, understanding the product, you know, putting together basic sample system designs and package solutions sort of thing. And the guy I was learning from left 2 weeks after I joined and then never replaced him. So it was just me. But yeah, you know, and then from there, I got that real sort of like initial experience of sales and speaking to customers, getting to meet new people, talking to meet people, speaking to the external sales guys who, you know, one of them I got on with really, really well. And I went on a few visits with him and that sort of thing. But, and I was like, do you know what? You know, I must have been, what, 21 at the time. He's got a brand new Audi A4 Quattro Black Edition, lives in a nice house. How's he got there? Okay, well, he's done it through the sales route. And I just enjoyed getting out there, speaking to new people, learning about the customer's processes, problems, understanding them, and then, you know, coming back and putting together solutions that meet their needs and help them out. And really, that's the where I'm at the moment. That was like, okay, do you know what? I'm interested in doing sales. I've got background in engineering industries and that sort of thing. So for me, it was ended up becoming like a natural progression.
I'm seeing a transferable skills conversation coming on here.
I mean, I was just about to ask a question about skills. What would you say has been your most valuable skill then? Your sales skills or your tech skills? Technical skills, I should say.
Both. I don't think either have been more valuable. I think the fact that I have both of those skills has put me in a great position because it means that when I am talking to customers and they are maybe going into technical detail about their process, I've got the sort of brain that can analyze and understand it. And then I've got the other side of it, which is the sales side where, you know, you've got to look at what value you can provide the customer and you know, have those conversations around who are they, who are we up against, whatever, that sort of thing. And basically put you in the best possible position to win the project. You know, I did actually recently, I did a, we call it a strength scope analysis. So it's an online analysis of yourself. And then it gives you a report telling you what your strengths are and what your, it says weaknesses, but I don't like that term. So I go areas for improvement. So for me, some of my strengths were resilience, which if you're going to be a sales guy, you basically need resilience because there's going to be times that you're going to get knocked back. You're going to get knocked down. You know, customers are going to say thanks, but no thanks. And, you know, if you let every single one of those affect you, then, you know, you'll end up getting ground down and ground down. So I'm a fairly resilient person. Well, I am a very resilient person. I you know, I always manage to see the best in things and that sort of thing. So customer might say no, but to me, that's a not right now. sort of thing. And yeah, you know, self-confidence as well. You've got to have confidence in yourself and your own ability. But I've managed to build up my confidence by building on the technical knowledge. So I've got that background to support me. So that's probably two of the main skills that I came out of that strength scope. And then, you know, areas for improvement. I can't even remember what they were. I need to go back and have a look at those. I
think. They don't matter.
Oh yeah, I don't think there was any. No,
listen, I'm the perfect being. Yeah.
Sounds like Cell from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, Cell, exactly that. Yeah. But yeah, that's sort of my understanding. And I mentioned the growth mindset for me. That is key for anyone is, you know, maintaining that you're developing yourself on a personal level.
Yeah.
And how important was that to actually be embedded into like the company's culture? Because I don't know, company culture is like a hot topic, but you know, a lot of companies don't have a culture out there, you know. It's just you come to work, you do what you need to do, and kind of got to figure it out on your own.
Yeah. So often, you know, I work for a huge company, a global company there. They're incredibly large, which I didn't even realize quite how big the company was until maybe this year, the beginning of this year. And a lot of companies will say, you know, your career is your own, you own your own career and that sort of thing. But and which is true. If you want to progress and you have the desire to push yourself, you'll be that sort of person that's always looking to improve and that sort of thing. But there needs to be opportunity as well, which is where obviously the company comes in. So, yeah, obviously at the moment I've got a decision to make around what I'm going to do and going forward and that sort of thing. So, but that came about through conversations with my managers and that sort of thing and senior management of the company to identify what I want to do, where I want to go and that sort of thing. I was initially looking at doing an MBA, so a master's in business admin.
Mm-hmm.
To provide me with a greater understanding of business in general. And you know, obviously they're quite expensive, so I wanted my company to pay for it. And we had those conversations and I think not now, but in over the next few years, I would have got that. But obviously I've decided to go down a different route now in applying for a new role, which I think Sim maybe alluded to at the beginning. So
you have led us onto it perfectly. Why don't you tell us about what's going on with a possible new move for you?
Yeah, okay. So I was looking at, you know, I was speaking to senior managers. I was networking, you know, speaking to more people throughout the business because I was very, very focused on my product line that I was supporting within the one business unit. And really, you know, to be able to progress, you've got to almost build your own brand. So I need to build the brand of Harry Turner. Who is Harry Turner? Mm. What's he going to bring to the company and that sort of thing? So I was reaching out to some other people, asking for some advice on like career development, personal development and that sort of thing. And I was talking to one guy who's the manager, the sales manager for the process sales team that we have. And, you know, just so happened to be talking to him about all of that stuff. And he said, actually, do you know, we've got this role coming up. It's going to be live tomorrow to apply for. It's an internal role initially, so they were looking at obviously internal people. And I was like, well, actually, do you know what? That sounds quite interesting. So that is the account manager role for the chemical industry within Siemens. So I applied for that. I spent 2 to 3 weeks doing research, building my knowledge, learning, speaking to people. Reaching out to other people to learn from their experiences and get a greater understanding of account management and, you know, specifically external sales, because this will be a purely external sales role. I will have a target to hit each year.
Is it sort of essentially a different product that you'll be working with, but this time you'll be doing rather than sort of working with customers that already exist, you'll be trying to sign new work?
So it's, I will still be working with the same products, but I will be covering a wider product portfolio.
I got you.
Okay. So I have my technical background in analytics to fall back on, but I will be supporting a wider product portfolio. So it will be, rather than talking specifics about and technically about products, I'm going to be talking about the value that working with Siemens has. And also, you know, I don't know if you know much about sales. You guys aren't salesmen, I don't think. So, you know, there's this fairly new concept of challenger sales that's come about. So I will be doing some research and looking into that and probably going on some training courses, which is about understanding the customer, understanding the way they think, and maybe challenging them to think in slightly different ways. To get the best out of them, you know, and building that relationship as well, showing them that they can trust you. But it's going to be all about the value that Siemens and our products can bring to that customer. That's what it's going to be. So it's an account manager role for the chemical industry. So I'm going to have a number of specific accounts. I don't know what that number is yet. You know, I haven't formally accepted the role, so I'm waiting on that at the moment, and I am going to, so I can tell you that. Exclusive.
Hey, congratulations.
thank you. Exclusive to the Find Your Hustle podcast, Harry Turner's accepting the new role.
Does the employer know yet?
When we put this out, you can play it to someone and then...
and see what they say, yeah. So I will be, you know, all being well, I'm going to be moving into that role, but I will have focus accounts who I'm dealing with and going out and visiting those. It will be some existing customers. It will be some maybe fairly new customers that we're doing business with already. And there will be some development accounts that, you know, maybe we're not doing anything for. So we're gonna be having a look at those as well.
So what kind of targets would they set you?
I have no idea. At the moment, I'm not sure. That's I will know in a few weeks probably. But it will be, you know, I'll have targets to hit. Which will be obviously linked to, as a sales guy, you often get bonuses and that sort of thing. So I'm really looking forward to it though. It's certainly going to be a bit of a change, but I'm looking forward to having the focus on those specific accounts and, you know, building up relationships with them, and but also developing myself. So I've not got masses of account management experience, so I've got a real great opportunity to you know, build on that growth mindset of developing myself continuously, to, you know, speak to the other account managers in the team, speak to my manager, put in a development plan, you know, what targets do I want to hit on the development side, do I need to go on any training courses, build up my knowledge and understanding, and really, you know, get out there and do the best I can at this role. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be great. So yeah.
A little funny story. So you said neither of us are salesmen. I was once a salesman at a soap shop.
Not a good story.
You've heard the story before, have you, Mark?
Back when I was 50, I used to flip sofas. Well, not flip. I used to try to sell them at a sofa shop. It went very badly. I think I was a salesman for about 4 months. I sold 2 sofas.
Okay.
That okay was so skeptical.
Really, it was just selling sofas to your family as well, wasn't it? Came in about sofa for you, so they bought a sofa.
I'm pretty sure the 2 people that I sold to were like sympathy sales as well. They were like, this guy sucks so much. Let's just buy this damn chair. My boss had a speaker with me. He's saying, listen, I don't think this is for you, my friend. And I ended up going into, I started doing their Google Places account and their website and stuff like that. And that's what got me into tech, in the end. But sales, I kind of thought that I had the personality for sales, because I'm like, I'm outgoing. I can be quite analytical. I tend to think I can work people out, things like that. But when it came to sales, I don't know if it was always too young or just because people.
You can open, man, but it's about the close. I think so. Do you know in like there's a job offer that came across my desk the other day, and it was something. What's it called? A close end deal negotiator for like a sale, like software as a service. Like there needs to be a guy to just finish the deal.
Yeah,
like it's a whole job in itself.
The ABC of sales, right? Always be closing.
Yeah,
any sales. That's what you need to think about, really, and have that in your mind. But you're right. Often there's a person that does that final negotiating. Yeah. I'd say there's probably not that, you know, in the industry that I work in, that doesn't come up often, but in others, definitely. But if you're selling, ABC, always be closing.
Always be closing.
And I think for, you know, to an extent, every job role has some form of sales in it, whether or not you'll be selling a product or a service or a solution, but selling yourself as a person, as an employee, to build that trust, you know, with a consumer, with a business, so that they want to do the business with you. So there's always I think that in the majority of roles, there's an element to it, for sure.
Yeah, well, people gotta like you, you know.
Yeah, that's very true.
It was like that's one thing we can't really beat, you know, around the bush about. Like, people have to like you, and the likable salesperson, or, you know, the likable service manager will get the call back. You know, the repeat business comes from likability. Sometimes.
To an extent, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes.
To an extent, yeah. If you've got a great product as well and you're the best in the market, then it's gonna happen. But that doesn't happen very often, does it? There's always someone else out there that can do the same thing as you. So relationships are key. I'm not sure they're as important as maybe they used to be. I think the dynamic of sales is changing moving forward. We're moving into the digital age. So, you know, one of the buzzwords at the moment for us is digitalization, which is, you know, what can we do with the data that's available within customers' processes and sites and businesses? How can we analyze that and make it more readily available? What does it mean to them? But also, you know, my company, for example, we have such a wide product offering. How can we make it possible for the customer to have visibility of our full product offering as easily as possible? And that's going to involve some digital software and that sort of thing.
I did want to ask you something though, Harry. You said earlier that you have very good interview skills, and I want to chat to you about that. Why don't you talk us through what your interview skills are, how you approach an interview, and what makes you think that you can smash any interview that you get?
Research. Research is key for me. It was huge in my latest interview, obviously, for that role that I've mentioned. I put in many hours of research, and I had to do a presentation. So I had to do like a 30-minute presentation on what I wanted to do with the role and why me, what would success look like, understanding of the industry, put a bit of a plan together, that sort of thing. So I spent loads of time talking to people, understanding just career development in general, what to say, but who to speak to, what to look into, and that sort of thing. And I spent, you know, for a 30-minute interview, I probably spent a good 24, 32 hours of research, which for a 30-minute presentation is probably quite a lot. So, yeah, I just did so much research as possible and then put my presentation together, which was obviously based on all the research. And I actually, normally I rehearse my presentation to make sure that I nail it. But because I'd spent so long doing the research, I didn't need to. I just had key points on the screen and it just flowed. So, you know, the research key, 100%. Confidence, you know, you need to be able to speak confidently and back up what you're saying. So I would make a statement about something and then back it up with an example of what I've done in my previous role, of how it links in and that sort of thing. So having that adaptability to use examples, relate a statement to an example within your current career or life or whatever, that sort of thing is really key.
What does success look like? It's sort of a big and almost loaded question. How did you approach that aspect?
For a salesman? Yeah. What does success look like?
Well, because you said in your interview, in your presentation, sorry, you had to answer the question essentially as to what does success look like.
So for me, it's three aspects. One was focusing on your existing customers, making sure they're still receiving the great service that they've been receiving for many years through their previous account manager, etc., that sort of thing, and making sure they don't, you know, decide to go elsewhere. Then the next point was growth and new business. You know, growth businesses, you know, build on that and win more business from that customer. The new business, you know, for any salesman, the ultimate success is you find that account, that customer that do nothing with your company at the moment, and then they completely convert from a competitor to doing business with you. That is literally ultimate success. Bring in a new customer and completely convert them to working with your company. And then there's also the personal development side. So that also for me is success. you know, I want to develop myself so that in however many years it might be, 5-10 years time, when the next role comes along that I'm really interested in, I'm ready for that role. I've done enough personal development within my current role, not only to put me in the best possible position within my current role to succeed and hit those targets and that sort of thing, but also that when the next one comes up, you've got that experience, that knowledge, grounding, understanding to be able to put yourself in the best possible position for the next role as well, in however long it may be. That for me, that's what success is.
I see. And that's what you presented.
Something along those lines, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember exactly what I said, but yeah.
No wonder they gave you the job.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. I tell you, if you'd have heard me, I think I did fairly well in the presentation as well. So, but that's the confidence, the research, you know, and the ability to, you know, think on your feet and relate to examples and that sort of thing that really put me in the strong position. I think I was in a strong position anyway on going into the presentation.
Mm.
I like to have a base of knowledge to draw upon, you know, if needs be. And that's where the research came in, and obviously my current role and what I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah. I really find it interesting how you have such a methodical approach to your career compared to most people we spoke to on the podcast, actually.
Most people sort of just fell into just being rich. get it.
Like, obviously, a lot of people have come on here and spoke about sort of the kind of goals they had and how they wanted their career to develop. But from the sounds, from what you've told us so far, particularly since you left your last position, you've been very methodical about how you wanted to progress. You've been analytical about how you've been so far. You've chosen specifically how you want to do something. For example, you networked, you picked out the role that you were looking at, you then spoke to the people who were doing that role, and then when you're moving forward, you're planning already how you're going to tackle the role that you're going to take on. You're very methodical and sort of pragmatic about how you're addressing your career. Is that a personality trait, or have you developed that?
Probably a bit of both, I think. So I've always been a fairly motivated, driven person. So, you know, in any job that I've had, I will always give my all. You know, I'll make sure that the role that I'm doing will get 110% of me to succeed. Because obviously, you want to do well.
Mm.
And if you're a career-minded person, you want to develop, you want to progress, and that sort of thing. You want to get to, I don't know, CEO of a company, wherever it may be. Then you need to have thoughts around how you're going to do that. And for me, focusing on the personal development side and developing myself and learning is basically how I make sure that I do that and put myself in the best possible position going forward. And then, as I said, you know, whatever role I'm in, they will get 110, 150% of Harry Turner focusing on that role and giving it my all to make sure that I succeed in what I do, because that's the sort of person that I am. I like to succeed. I like to do well. I'm motivated, driven.
That's not what I'm asking you though, Harry. I think every single person that we speak to, including me and Mark, is very motivated and sort of driven to do well. I'm sort of trying to understand more about your approach, because your approach is very methodical. As far, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but
the methodical side has basically come from that motivation is what I was trying to explain. So this role that I've recently been offered came about by chance. Mm-hmm. So I just happened to be talking to the manager at the time. He said, "Oh, have you thought about this?" And I hadn't. So I started thinking about it, and that's where, okay, I thought, well, let's break it down. If I'm going to go for this role, I want to put forward the best possible version of me, you know, in the interview to get offered it. So what do I need to do to get there? So that's when I look at it and take it back to how am I going to get to that position in the 2 weeks that I've got to prepare for the interview. And that's where the methodical side of it came in, I guess.
And then you just break it down into steps and...
Yeah, working out what I need to do to get myself into the, you know, to get me the job, basically.
Yeah.
And that, you know, being technically minded, technically biased to whatever in I am, I like to break things down into smaller problems, smaller steps, work through them, and then ultimately you're going to get to where you want to be.
Mm.
And really, you know, if you look at your career like that, if you have a focus, an aim, a career plan, you've got an end goal, you need to work backwards to work out what skills you need to develop, maybe what jobs you need to do in between to build up the knowledge, and how you're going to get to where you want to be. So that's my thinking anyway, on how I would do things going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have a question for you, Harry. So you mentioned, obviously you mentioned networking, which is, can we do an episode where networking is not mentioned?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. As,
like, I don't think so.
There's no, it's almost like you can't have success without networking, but you mentioned networking with people, in the role that you'd want to go into. Now, when I was younger, I failed at, and I'm looking, when you said it, I went and looked on my LinkedIn of me reaching out to a person doing something that I wanted to do. And it's just, obviously it hasn't worked. So how did you approaching the people that are doing what you're doing?
I'm fortunate that within the company I work for, we're obviously a very large company, there are a number of account managers within the company already. So it was reaching out and networking internally for me, you know, to get my name out there, to make it known that, you know, Harry Turner wants to progress. He wants to do well. He wants to succeed. And he also wants to, you know, stay within Siemens and do it within Siemens where he can. So actually, we had an event in Manchester in July, Transform 2022. It's a brilliant event, full Siemens event. And I met one of the account managers there who I hadn't met before. And actually, the first thing I did after that was reach out to him and ask for a chat about, you know, I hadn't even identified this role to apply for yet, but just I was looking at my own development and mentoring. So we have quite a good mentoring culture. Identifying a mentor was kind of the next step that I wanted to do, to, you know, go to them with questions, problems, and get some of their advice, how they've got to where they are now. So. Unfortunately, you say you don't want to mention networking every podcast, but I think it's key within business and careers is to learn from other people, and the only way you're going to do that is by networking.
Essentially, yeah. I think what Marco said was every single episode networking is highlighted as a key skill.
Yeah. Not that we don't want to mention it. It's just okay, I don't think there's never been. What was this, 37 episodes? No one has come in here and not said they've used or leveraged a network in some form of success. And it's like, you know, the way they tell you as you know, as a young person, you know, your network is your net worth. But what does that actually mean? You know, we need That's examples like this, Harry. You know what I mean? Of you going out to an actual networking event and, you know, making a worthwhile connection and finding a mentor from it, you know?
Yeah. But it is key. Even in day-to-day life, meeting new people, you're still networking, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you've got those skills of meeting new people and that sort of thing in your social life, whatever, when you're down the pub having a pint with your mates, if there's someone there you end up chatting to at the bar, you know, well, actually, Is he a nice guy? Whatever, that sort of thing. You know, that's all about networking and being able to speak to people. And you mentioned earlier, likability. You know, it's fairly key as well, to make sure that you're, you know, okay, you don't have to get on with everyone. Absolutely not. But if you're going into a situation where you want to get something out of it, i.e. a networking opportunity, then you've got to be likable.
Mm.
Well, can I tell you a really funny story about a networking event recently that I've been?
Please
I've,
do.
Sim knows I've been trapping out the networks for a little while now. These past few months, I think I may have been to maybe four networking events. Tech Week happened last month, and then Tech Week I think is happening again in October. So, you know, Find Your Hustle, we're going to be there.
Yeah, nice. Where is that?
It's going to be in Birmingham. So Birmingham Tech is having a whole week. It's going to be, I think, a few venues. Aston University, maybe Eastside. Don't quote me. I'm not too sure, but it's going to be very central. And there's going to be some big hitters there. I told you, I met someone in tech that's actually Forbes 30 under 30, which was cool. But so before I actually went to network, I was looking at, like, you know, is there a methodical approach to networking? And then one of the advice that I got was, get yourself a wingman when you're networking. And I was like, how do I find a wingman? But that was probably like the most outlandish piece of advice. You know, it's always, you know, put your best foot forward, blah, 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 blah. But this one was sort of like an argument based, you know, when you say something and someone else says something, it's more believable. So get someone that says something for you. So I ended up going to a Birmingham Tech event and I met this guy. We're going to get him on the podcast soon, Sam. But I met this guy and then I seen him at another networking event and he was selling me before I even said hello to people. You know, I get to people and it was like, oh, so you're the guy with the Find Your Hustle and the podcast. And then I'm selling it now and the connection is just so much easier.
A wingman's a great idea, I guess.
Hmm.
And now I think about it, when I first met that account manager who's been sort of like mentoring me a little bit, I was actually going for dinner with him and a colleague of mine who I know really well. So that was almost like a bit of a wingman situation without realizing it. You know, we were just going out to dinner. Yeah. But it was my colleague that introduced me to him. So and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I go for it. It can work for sure. Why not? Mm. And, you'll have to let me know about those tech events. I'm maybe interested in coming along to one as well.
Yeah, no, I'll most definitely send you like the flyer, I suppose.
Yeah, that would be good, mate. Yeah, for sure.
Sweet. Couple of last things I do want to ask you, Harry. First of all, for all the kids listening who are thinking about getting into a line of work similar to yours, what kind of salary ranges are they talking for working as a product manager or an account manager at Siemens?
Are you allowed to disclose, first of all? That's why
I said range.
Okay, cool.
Now, I can't really say exactly, but, you know, industry standards for account managers, you know, a really sort of like new account manager with no experience has managed to get into the role, I would probably say late 40s to mid 50s or early 50s. For an experienced account manager, mid 50s to mid 60s. You know, and it all depends on your experience and the role as well. So for account management, that's what I would say. It's probably, you know, it can have quite a big range depending on obviously the accounts that you're looking at and the target. And generally.
This is at 30. So essentially what I was trying to push at was that whole conversation we were having about uni degrees versus apprenticeships. I think this is the key part which helps lean it into the apprenticeship favor. Essentially, it's because you got a 3-year head start on your career. Whatever you're doing now is what somebody is likely to be doing when they're mid-30s university, because again, essentially, you've started off working straight away and the experience is already behind you.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. So, you know, and you know, if people want to go to university and that sort of thing, well, I did an apprenticeship and I still managed to get a degree. So,
well,
also, you can still do that.
Yeah,
you can. Can't you?
Yeah.
So that's one way to look at it. Mm. But yeah, as you said, you know, I don't think I would be in this position if I'd gone to uni and then started out this way. I don't think I'd be doing what I'm doing now if I'd done that. I'd be doing something completely different probably. So it's kind of just, you know, a happy development, but happily gone this way for me.
Yeah.
But I've put myself in this position by the hard work and determination to succeed throughout my career. So,
and then finally, what I wanted to ask was, obviously you're going into an account management now. What's your career vision? What's your longer term goals and targets? Where do you see Harry when he's 40?
I'd like to, you know, account management Okay, so when I joined Siemens, my initial thoughts were I want to be a global account manager. Mm. Okay, so I want to take that step up to, I think within Siemens, that's probably two or three steps up from where I am at the moment. But I don't know whether or not that's still my goal. You know, I'm looking forward to doing the account management and I'm really looking forward to learning these new skills. But I think ultimately I might want to be a business manager. So that would be, you know, managing your own business unit, having people report into you and that sort of thing as well. But, you know, the skills that I'm developing in this role at the moment are going to put me in great positions to go for something like that going forward. But I think, you know, business manager, general manager, I'm not going to say managing director because that's...
Why not?
You know, yeah, you know, everyone comes and says, I want to be CEO. Okay, well, how realistic is it that you're going to be CEO? You know, again, if I decide to go away from Siemens to a smaller company or something, then maybe managing director. But, you know, within the company I'm in at the moment, general manager, I'd like to think I can get myself to that sort of level. I think so, yeah.
Okay. I mean, 10 years is a long time. And
it is a long time.
If what was that Bill Gates quote? People underestimate how much they can do in 10 years and overestimate how much they can do in one. I think if you really sort of dive in both feet with this account management role and you do well at it, I think it can really propel your career forwards. And I think you're in that industry where it's if you start to make a name for yourself, you'll be like picked up very quickly because other companies are trying to poach you.
Yeah, well, there is that, yeah. But I mean, you know, within any company, if you're an account manager, then it's a fairly high profile role. So I'm certainly going to get known throughout the company, I hope, when I succeed, because I will succeed. I'm quite lucky as well. You know, the manager that I'm going to be working for is really believes in developing his team. So we're going to put a personal development plan in process so that I do pick up all of the skills needed to become the best account manager that they've ever seen. I forgot to tell you about this, actually. At the end of my interview, I left them with a drop the mic statement, you know? So it was something like, you know, I'm not stood here before you presenting, claiming to be, you know, an account manager with 15 to 20 years experience who's going to come in and absolutely blow their targets out the water. But what you will get from me is a young, enthusiastic, motivated, driven individual who over the next 2 to 3 years will do everything they can to make them the best account manager that Siemens have ever seen.
You got to put the explosions in.
Drop the mic. Yeah, no, I did that. And actually, apparently that was something that resonated with them. So... You know, why not? You know, you're selling yourself, so aim high. If you aim as high as you can, then even if you fall short, you will be significantly higher than if you aim low anyway.
Love that, man. Love that.
Yeah. And that is me.
Mark, how many jobs are live on the job board right now?
Right now. I'll tell you what, guys, I was running the import during the podcast. So we have 4,905 jobs today.
Search product manager on Find Your Hustle. See what comes up.
Ooh, okay. What could be Harry's exact role then? Okay, so we have the exact match. We have IT project manager. We have graduate software developers here. We have business partner. We have a few Amazon jobs on, actually, which is Ooh. Great. We have product manager non-IT for Amazon UK, project manager for the page group.
Load more. People, if you have been interested in Harry's story and enjoy what he does, head over to the findyourhustle.co.uk website. Plenty of jobs there. If there's anything specific that you want, listen, Mark runs this magical import that just brings around whatever job you're looking for. Send across an email. I'm sure we can get you what you're looking for exactly. London-based, Birmingham-based, wherever you want. and subscribe to the mailing list. If you're on the mailing list, you can get these jobs sent directly to your inbox so you don't miss out as soon as they come out.
You said it.
Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been brilliant.
Oh, no, our pleasure, man, honestly.
If you want me to come back in 6 months' time and give you an update on how things are going, I'll be more than happy to. Just hit me up.
We have been constantly talking about bringing back, because a lot of people are, because they, I hope you enjoyed this episode, but a lot of people, when they come and they enjoy the episode and they always want to come back, we still haven't had a repeat guest yet. I think we really should. We should just do a round of repeat episodes, especially with people whose story was like mid-development. Nathan Yusuf, for example, I think he was...
I listened to that one, yeah.
He was graduated now, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He went into investment banking, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to hear what his story was like once he got into this. So maybe we invite him on, maybe we invite you back on, Harry.
He's a multi-millionaire and retired already, no doubt.
Investment banking, anyway. Investment banking, kill it, man.
Yeah. I could try and get my brother to come on at the same time or something.
Oh, talk about poker player.
Yeah.
Listen, we're always happy to have new guests on. Harry, it's been phenomenal having you here. Your story is inspiring to people. I think a lot of people can learn from how you approach your career. You're very analytical, methodical, and I hope you kill that account management role. I think you'll do very well.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Great to meet you guys as well. Thank you very much.
Mark, do you want to tell them where they can find us?
let's see if I remember now.
It's been a few months, yeah. you forgot all the platforms and the ads.
You know, I go around, I tell people we're on all platforms. So you can find us on Amazon Music. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts. You can find our RSS feed being illegally transported on all corners of the internet. You can find us on Anchor, Radio Cast, Pocket Cast. We're everywhere, man, except for SoundCloud.
Wherever you find us, make sure you subscribe, hit that follow button. If you can, I think Spotify and Apple have finally agreed that you should let people rate podcasts. So now you can rate us on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Make sure you do. It really helps us out. And hopefully we'll be back again in a much shorter amount of time compared to last time.
Yeah.
All right. It's been real, people.
Till next time.
You've been locked in to Find Your Hustle with Mark McCourty and Sim Dahir. Catch you next week.